Good afternoon, Northern Colorado. Welcome into the whole show, powered by PDC Energy. It is going to be an absolutely jam-packed Monday. A lot to get to. Got the Broncos getting the dub over the Chargers, setting up a monster Sunday night game against the Chiefs. We'll get to that, as well as UNC-CSU basketball on Saturday. That was a lot of fun. So we're going to get into all of that. The Nuggets receiving some terrible news about Michael Porter Jr. with his back surgery. We're going to have Harrison Wind of DNVR Nuggets on the program to discuss that later on in the show. I mean, take your pick. There's a lot to talk about. We're starting with this. Nevada beats CSU football 52-10 in their final game of the season. That's not really the story, the score there. I mean, I suppose it is, but the story as it continues to be or was all season is Steve Addazio. Is he the right guy for the job? Will he be back next year? Joining me now from the Fort Collins, Coloradoan, our Rams insider, is Kevin Lytle. And Kevin, I know we want to talk CSU hoops, but we got to get to the drama first, my friend. What a terrible way to end the season for Steve Addazio and this Rams team.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to put it. Obviously, we knew it was, you know, there was no bowl on the line, nothing. It was kind of just the end game. And to be frank, often those are kind of nondescript, very forgettable games. And that's, you know, to be very honest, that's what I expected. I kind of thought CSU would be like a lot of the other games, you know, somewhat competitive. CSU would probably lose a close-ish game and, you know, done and dusted, move on to the offseason is what I expected. And obviously, it was everything but that. It was incredibly explosive. I described it as an incredible first 30 minutes of football in the most literal sense of the term. Of you almost couldn't believe what just happened. So I've never seen a game like that. Especially with the coach ejection.
Kevin, I didn't even have a chance to sit down before Nevada scored 14 points. I mean, this was how fast that happened. And then, as you said, okay, take us through the ejection. A weird situation, right? I mean, he was warned, and then another. Walk us through that whole deal, and then if you could, walk us through what Steve Addazio kind of told you guys went down.
Yeah, so I guess the background knowledge to know is two unsportsmanlike penalties is an automatic ejection for anyone, a coach, a player. That rule was put into place in 2016. So CSU, I believe I'd have to check. I think it's 14-0, maybe 21-0 at this point. It doesn't really matter what the score was, to be honest. Maybe it's 28. I don't even know. but that doesn't really matter. CSU had a big play, kind of a little screen to Trey McBride. He went, I don't know, roughly 30, 40 yards, got into the red zone. It was called back for ineligible man downfield. After the game, Trey said that basically Gary Williams covered him up, or that's what the ref said. They said, you know, Gary Williams had even cleared with the ref that he was lined up properly. So either way, they were obviously mad about losing a big play, so he gets Addazio gets an unsportsmanlike there. No big, you know, not a huge deal. It happens. And then I think it's two or three plays later, CSU had a third and long, completed a pass that would have been a first down. That was called back for holding. And then on fourth the next third down after that penalty was enforced, Todd Senteo was sacked, fumbled, Nevada recovered. Addazio said, he claimed that whistles were, went off. And so it shouldn't have been Nevada ball, because once the whistle goes, how can you claim who recovered it? And he said that he was calm, didn't curse. All he said was to the refs was, guys, we need to be better than that. And this happened during the commercial break. So, it wasn't on TV really. And to be frank, no one in the stadium was really paying attention because it's just a commercial break. You come back from commercials and there's a flag on the ground. And the referee says unsportsmanlike conduct, ejection automatically due to the rule. It's just the second time since that rule went into place that coach has been ejected in 5 years. The first was actually earlier this season from Bowling Green's coach, who ironically is from Steve Addazio coaching tree. Very crazy situation. I believe it's the first CSU coach to ever be ejected from a game. Like I say, second in, at minimum 5 years and probably longer than that. So pretty wild situation. The idea that he didn't curse or say much to the referees, I have good sourcing saying that that's not fully true. That may have been the end of his statement, but there was more to it, which of course makes sense. I don't think a ref is going to kick a coach out for just saying, guys, we need to be better. Pretty wild situation. So Dazio was not there for, you know, the second half and, you know, the final minutes of the second quarter.
Well, it's pretty rare anyway for, like, you see it in basketball more because, you know, again, basketball. But football, you just don't see it very often. Very little. You don't even see flags that often on coaches. They let them say quite a bit. So, you know, if that's all he said, as you talked about, Kevin, then that ref should probably be looked into. So I'm with you. I mean, without knowing the full landscape, and you're saying, hey, I've got a source that's like, I don't know if that's the full story. And judging by, you know, some of the rants and some of the lip reading we've probably done on TV before with Adazio, you have to scratch your head and wonder if there was more said. All right, so you add that, and then you add losing 52-10 on senior night. Trey McBride, I mean, so much talent. There's a lot of talented players on this team. I got to be honest with you, Kevin. Before this game, and I think you and I had talked about it on our college football kickoff show, for better or worse, Adazio's probably back next year because of the buyout, because of, hey, you do ultimately want to give a coach more time to recruit their style. But that kind of game, you know, if you like what you said to start it, if that would have been a forgettable situation, just a, you know, 24-17 game, Nevada wins, we walk off, whatever, then okay, we're probably done. But you get kicked out of the game, you get ejected from the game, you lose 52-10. Your responses again to the media, to you guys, Kevin, is still very head scratching. All that taken into account, now I'm wondering, is Adazio back next year?
I think it's a much more difficult conversation this week than you expected it would be. Because, I felt going into Saturday, I felt, you know, basically 95%, you know, almost certain that he would return. You know, that last couple percent is almost just your margin of error of you never know. But then with how the game unfolded and then talking to folks and people, you know, people that matter, people that care, people that know things, saying, you know, wow, this is, you know, shocking how everything unfolded. The amount of folks, you know, boosters, season ticket holders, fans I've heard from saying, you know, I'm a 15-year season ticket holder. I'm not coming back. It's a lot. A lot of people that, you know, I would consider green and gold through and through that have said they're not coming back is shocking. And, you know, obviously I'm not the bean counter. So, you know, CSU is, you know, either directly hearing from some of those folks or indirectly, you know, whether it's social media or whatever. And that matters. I mean, you have to listen to people that have invested in the program for a long time saying that they're very upset with what's happening. So I think, you know, Joe Parker, Joyce McConnell, they have to be having a discussion this week. It would be malpractice of their job if they're not discussing the future of the football program, because you can't have a showing like that at the end of a very unsuccessful season anyway. You can't have that and just not even discuss what to do moving forward. I still don't know what will happen. I probably still lean toward Adazio will return, but it's less certain now than it was, you know, a week ago.
So the buyout goes from what, Kevin? Correct me if I'm wrong. If they were to fire him today, which would be silly, $5.5 million, and then after Wednesday or Thursday, it goes down to $3 million, is that right?
Yeah, so it's at five.
Okay, five.
Around five right now. And then Thursday, December 2, it drops to $3 million. So, yeah, no, at least a fit. Even if they, you know, they may have, even if privately they've decided to move on, they would never say anything until December 2, because obviously you have to save that money when it's, you know, sitting there right in front of you. And either way, it'll be interesting to see what happens this week. Obviously, if they were to move on, you know, we'll hear there will be a lot. But I kind of feel like with how things went, Joe Parker probably needs to talk publicly. You know, most likely it would just be a statement sent to boosters or fans. But I can't imagine that you can, even if you're going to keep Adazio and move into the off season, I can't imagine you have everything that happened in that game and just stay silent and move on to the off season. So I would have to think we'll hear something, but I don't know for certain.
It's interesting, Kevin. We're talking to Kevin Lytle of the Fort Collins, Colorado, and you're going to have to get your mathematician on this, right? I mean, you got to look at it and say, okay, if you do let him go, or if you want to pay the rest of his buyout, the $3 million, if you don't, and you just say we want to save $3 million, are you going to lose that? next year? Are you going to lose that in revenue? Not just ticket sales. Are you going to lose it in sponsor, you know, booster, sponsor, all that? I guess you have to weigh that. If you really are considering not moving on, you have to weigh, is saving $3 million worth it? And then, of course, the ultimate question for Joe Parker, does he really believe in Steve Addazio? And unless he's seeing something that we're not, it's hard that he would be telling us the truth if he said yes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where, you know, that's kind of why I wrote postgame. The math is tricky. So the $3 million, obviously, that's a very straight up number. You know exactly what that is. And then you would have to factor in, you know, X number of dollars more to hire a new coach. But you roughly know what that number would be. The harder math to do is what you were saying. The, you know, season tickets lost, game day revenue loss, you know, from merchandise, from beer sales, from food sales, all the stuff that comes with fans being in the stadium. You also have to factor there probably aren't people lining up, you know, to get new season tickets, you know, people that aren't ticket holders right now. So you have that. And then, yeah, the intangible of, you know, I heard from one booster who donates a, you know, fairly significant amount of money that says they're not going to do that next year, you know, things like that. So you have to start adding that math up too. And yeah, I think you nailed it. If you're fully convinced that this is going to turn around and, you know, the mini marshmallow saying we're this close, if you're sure that's true, then absolutely move forward. But obviously what we see on the field does not show that. And, you know, there are a lot of really good players leaving. So it's going to be a tall task next year. So it's a, you know, like I wrote, they're in a pickle. This is not a good situation because no matter what you do is a decision that carries risk.
Kevin, some of the things that I was bugged by watching the press conference, the postgame conference, and again, he said these two things consistently throughout the season, but it just feels like it came to a head Saturday night. One of them is just consistently putting down everything that Mike Bobo and his regime did in, what, five seasons? And let's not forget, I think I'm right in five seasons. The first three seasons, they were all bowl games. They went 7-6 three seasons in a row. And the next two, okay, he had bad health one of those years, and then I think that kind of carried over to that fifth. I was a Mike Bobo fan. I'm rooting for him in Auburn as an O coordinator. I'm not saying he was the right fit beyond that fifth year mark, but I'm not a huge fan of coming in and trashing everything that you did for 5 years. I think you and I have talked about it too, and it's kind of like a spit in the face, even some of your current players that are playing. So I'm not real cool with the whole idea of, well, we had to come in and teach these guys how to watch film. And let me tell you this, there was a lot of work to be had. You guys don't even know the half of it. Well, at some point, Bobo's regime did yield 7 wins 3 years in a row.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those, hey, you're replacing a coach who was, you know, basically fired. That means there were issues. Everyone knows that. That's not a secret. But to say it was, you know, an absolute downtrodden, you know, disaster of a program is pretty disingenuous, especially when you consider, you know, if we were to take, you know, who are CSU's top 10 players on this 2021 team, you know, probably, you know, what, seven or so would be from Bobo's era. Obviously, Trey McBride, your by far best player, was here already. Daquan Jackson, Toby McBride, Manny Jones, Barry Wesley, Dante Wright. I mean, that's a pretty good list, you know, and that's just off the top of my head, Ryan Stonehouse. That's a pretty good list of guys that you inherited. So it's a pretty good slap in the face to them to say, well, we were just terrible. We had absolutely nothing here when several of your best players were here. So, yeah, were there issues? Was there fixing that needed to be done after Bobo? Obviously, that's why you move on. But was it absolute bare cupboard situation? No, that's just, again, it's disingenuous to, I think, most significantly, the players and the fans. You know, people that know football, well, you have a lot of fans. They're paying a lot of money to go sit there and watch football games. So to basically tell them they don't know what they're watching, that's a tough pill to swallow, I think, for people that are putting down hard-earned money.
I think you're right. I've always hated that. You know, the fans are what makes this thing go round. And the second you say you need to be a football coach to enjoy the game, boy, you're going to lose a lot of people because football's king at grabbing the casual fan. So if you're going to say that the casual fan's wrong, you're going to lose some casual money pretty soon as well. The other issue I had, Kevin, was what we've also heard is that you, the media, us, the media, whatever, the fans too, don't see what's going on in the background. So you have no idea the bricks they're building and all these positives. And I guess my question to that is well, then what are those? Like, is your offensive line breaking records for lifting in the weight room? Are we increasing our – I mean, what is it? Recruiting – that's all I'm looking for. If he can give us some of those things, but it's just constantly, hey, you guys have no idea what we're building, well, what's going on then? Let us in on some of that.
Yeah, exactly. Sean Keeler, the Denver Post, basically asked that. He said, okay, you know, what specifically are you better at? And he listed, you know, again, kind of your generalities. He said, you know, well, our defense was awesome for half the year, which, and then, you know, used the injury excuse to explain why they didn't continue being awesome, which again grows old. And what I was thinking is, well, you know, there's a way that you can show us all this inside stuff. You can give us that access. There's nothing preventing giving media access to show these behind the scene things, which could, you know, if it's going like you claim, we could show readers what's happening, but, you know, instead, you know, that's not what happened. So, again, it's just, you know, in some ways talking down about, you know, fans just saying you have to blindly believe us, blindly believe that everything is good. And that's, you know, you can do that if you're 9-3, you can't do that if you're 3-9.
No. It's about wins and losses first, and then when it's about more about the losses than the wins, you got to start giving us some reasons. And to be honest with you, Kevin, there's times when I've looked at this and said, okay, I can deal with the 3-win season. I can't deal with the responses, and I can't deal with the excuses, and I can't deal. It seems like it's stacked up one thing after another this year, and I think fans grow very tired of that quickly when it comes to the point of, okay, we don't want to hear excuses and how bad it was when you got here, because we don't really believe that. I mean, they were going to games. So I think that part is a big issue, bigger than a lot of people would let on. I think the way he treats the media and to be honest, talks a little bit about the fans, I think is a big issue.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care particularly how, you know, the treatment of us media individuals. My problem is that, you know, like we discussed before, that's a mouthpiece to the fans. And I directly asked him, you know, what do you say? You know, there are a lot of fans frustrated about, you know, tonight specifically, the Nevada game and the season overall. What do you say to them to make them think next year is different? And basically, that's where we got the, you know, we're this close and, you know, people don't want to hear it, but you need to be patient. And, you know, to be honest, I didn't think that's a great answer. That's not a great rallying of the troops. It's more a, well, you guys need to sit back, sit on your hands and wait because it'll come later. But I'm not going to tell you exactly how it's going to be better. You just need to be patient. Believe me. And again, I didn't think that's where, or I do think that's where, you know, it's a chance to speak to your fans and try and rally your fans. And I just don't think that happened.
And I know I'm probably comparing two totally different coaches here, Kevin, but I do feel like when Mike Bobo was at his worst as far as wins and losses those last 2 years, and I think that year he got sick, there was a lot of patience for him. But that final year, I feel like some of the responses weren't anything close to this. They were, hey, you know, we got to get it right. That's on us coaches to go back and figure out. You heard a lot of that. Is it coach speak? Sure. So is Steve Adazio's, but the difference is it's negative coach speak toward everybody else. It's basically like, nah, you guys are the problem being too impatient. We'll get it someday. Bobo, on the other hand, I felt like it was like, nah, we got to go back to the lab and figure this out.
Yeah, definitely different tone and messaging, I would say. And again, different, you know, they're Coach Adazio's not the first, you know, football
sure.
coach to be somewhat abrasive. But again, it's just harder when you haven't had success. And this is where I go back to. And this isn't Adazio's fault, but, you know, it wasn't a terribly popular hire. And so that erases some of your honeymoon period and makes some of the, you know, I guess, abrasiveness rub fans, you know, wrong a little harsher than maybe a different situation, just because, you know, there just isn't a honeymoon period. And you know, it may not be necessarily fair, but it's the truth. You know, fans are just very frustrated.
Well, you know who would have had like a 4 or 5 year honeymoon period, and that's Tony Alford. I mean, that's the guy we talked about a lot, Kevin. He could have lost every game for the last 2 years, and I still think fans would be like, you know what? We're going to give it another shot.
Yeah, and that's where the, you know, whatever you want to call it, politics and
sure.
these big decisions come in. And yeah, it's difficult, but that's why, you know, these are very big decisions that, you know, administrators have to make. And It's just tough. They're such a big part of an athletic department, you know, a football program is, that you just have to be right.
Yeah. Yep, no question. Kevin, we only got a little bit. I know we didn't get to talk about the positive stuff, but my goodness, Saturday was an absolute blast. UNC, CSU, so much fun to watch. We need to make that basketball game happen every single year, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. You know, that and CU need to happen. That was a great, great game. Yeah, I think UNC is doing a great job. I think that's going to be a solid program. I think they'll do well in the Big Sky. You know, when they shoot like that, they're amazing. You know, they probably don't have a great plan B when the three ball isn't going in, but there's a lot of talent in that squad. Man, did they play hard. They played well. They threw a lot of wrinkles at CSU that had them uncomfortable. So all credit to UNC. They did a great job. CSU, again, they just have that comeback mindset, comeback ability. You know, they need to start games better. They can't be doing that against, you know, St. Mary's, for instance, coming up this weekend. But sure, nice to have that in your back pocket as a thing you can do.
Now, watching on TV, I always kind of tweeted this out when they were in their comeback midst, in the midst of their comebacks. I would say, hey, you can almost feel this calmness overtake the offense. And being there on Saturday, I could feel it. Like, there was just something in that five-minute mark. Yes, aggressive, crazy on defense. But then on offense, and I think that's Isaiah Stevens. I really do. Everything just kind of slows down. It's almost like you're watching this offense very fast, but almost in slow motion. It's hard to explain.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, I felt that in the Northeastern game in the Paradise Jam final. Like you say, it's a little different being there. You really get a sense of just the calm, because sometimes you can see teams that are in the, you know, oh crap mode, and they're never in that. And it's pretty cool watch. I think you're right. I think Isaiah Stevens is a huge part of that. That guy is so flatlined. He is the same up 30 and down 30, and it's a great thing to have. You know, you need the emotional leaders and things like that, and I think David Rye does a lot of that, but there are times you need the guy who's just steady as heck, and Isaiah Stevens does that, and you know, he just quietly had a monster second half to lead them back.
Well, it was it's a lot of fun. It's great to watch that program. Two fun coaches, too. Obviously, Nico Medved is already kind of becoming legendary for CSU, but I'm a big fan of Steve Smiley, too, with UNC. So I love it. I love Northern Colorado basketball. It's exciting to see what we're in store for the rest of the season. Kevin, if we can, we'll double dip, and we'll catch up with you on Thursday. Who knows? We may have some breaking news, or we may have more of the same. Probably more of the same, but we'll see.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brady.
All right, man. Kevin Lytle of the Fort Collins, Colorado. In 28 minutes after the hour, I got to take a break here. I got Broncos to hit. I got Nuggets to hit. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
You can win $1,000 with KFKA's Cash for Christmas. Go to 1310KFKA.com for contest details.